We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm so happy to be joined once again by Asra Nomani, who is now, I'm delighted to say, a senior contributor at the Federalist. She is also a senior fellow in the practice of journalism at the Independent Women's Network. Asra, first of all, welcome formally as a senior contributor to the Federalist, and welcome to back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you all and to be publishing regularly at the Federalist. Like, I love the fact that we got to prove everything. We got to have the receipts. We got to fact check. We got to do everything. It's every principle that I got into journalism to defend and express. And so I'm so happy to be doing it at the Federalist, because there are very few places now that will touch the politically incorrect. and Federalist is one of those places. So thank you to all the listeners who support the Federalist also.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think it's humbling for us to publish you. You're just such a tireless and incredibly, incredibly skilled journalist. So on that note, speaking of the untouchable subjects that we need tireless journalists to attack, Asra has a column at the Federalist. I think it ran last week, actually. I saw it and was like, oh, man, this, we got to do a podcast on this. It was called How the Washington Post and the ACLU Helped Amber Heard Attack Johnny Depp. And it really is helpful at sort of anatomizing how this the op-ed that is at the center of the Depp Heard trial, which, by the way, is a spectacle on TikTok and YouTube. Like, Gen Z is obsessed with the trial for some reason. But it's like the most, it's the biggest news story in the country. And this Washington Post op-ed is at the center of it. Yeah. So, Asra, if you can just break down a little bit, maybe like your thesis, and then we'll get into the details of it, because those are very interesting too. But when you say the Washington Post and ACLU helped Amber Heard attack Johnny Depp, what do you mean?
Oh my gosh. So I have been obsessed with this trial also. And I was there for the dog poop incident that Amber Heard claims on the bed. Right. I was there to witness the testimony by Johnny Depp about his tragic, you know, painful childhood. And then when this testimony came forward about the ACLU, I was thinking to myself, this is the scandal. This is the corruption. And what it is very simply a pay-to-play operation in which Amber Heard was elevated to be an ambassador for the ACLU on the issue of women's rights after she pledged $3.5 million to the ACLU. And thus, the ACLU in November 2018 sends an email to Amber Heard pitching her writing an op-ed on the issue of women's rights. Month passes, they literally write the op-ed, lawyer the op-ed, redraft the op-ed, edit the op-ed, and then pitch the op-ed to Michael Larrabee, editor of the Post opinion section, and they place the op-ed. So this was the ACLU machine that catapulted Amber Heard into this, you know, national stage with this national op-ed, and allowed that, you know, problematic sentence that alluded to her marriage to Johnny Depp to get into print. And so, you know, I've been a journalist for 35 years, actually, professional journalist for 35 years. I've written now hundreds of columns, and I've been a professor of journalism at Georgetown University, literally teaching the students how to do the reported op-ed. And if a student had turned in another student's work as their own, they would have failed the assignment. Mm. So the Washington Post breached just core journalism ethics in publishing the op-ed. And they really breached a really central thesis that you know very well, Emily, you know, that you cannot claim that somebody has done criminal activity without a conviction. You have to say alleged. Mm-hmm. That's just journalism 101. And so the thesis of the column is that the ACLU and Washington Post are co-conspirators with Amber Heard in this alleged defamation, and Johnny Depp should hold them responsible, and the readers should also hold them responsible, and they need to retract the column.
And that's what this is all about, that, you know, when you're a celebrity, you don't get special treatment from legacy media to sort of in the heat of the Me Too moment, yeah, play sort of fast and loose with allegations like this. What I want to ask you about now, Oscar, is why, and maybe you think it was a red flag, but nobody cared. But like, if you're an editor at The Washington Post and you get this pitch from the ACLU, that's a red flag, is it not? That should sort of stop you in your tracks.
Oh, right then and there. I mean, literally, let me just read you the pitch. It was sent, like I said, to Michael Larrabee, who I know because I've pitched him for my own op-eds. And it was from... Let me tell you who it's from. Stacey Sullivan. So let me tell you her title. Deputy Director of, Editorial and Strategic Communications at the ACLU. So, I mean, come on. Like, that's a red flag right there that she has been the editorial manager, you know, for this op-ed. And it says, her pitch says this. Hey, Michael. So we know, okay, in Washington, D.C. circles, right? Like, she's pitched him before. He knows her. Wondering if we might interest you in a piece by Amber Heard. And then I love this parenthetical phrase that comes next. Parentheses. Who, as you may recall, was beaten up during her brief marriage to Johnny Depp. Mm. End parentheses. On what the incoming Congress can do to help protect women in similar situations. So without the parentheses, hey, Michael, wondering if we might interest you in a piece by Amber Heard on what the incoming Congress can do to help protect women in similar situations. So it's a clear assumption of guilt, first of all, right, by Johnny Depp. And again, Journalism 101, like, you know this, you can't say that the man beat his wife without a conviction. It's illegal to beat a wife. And so you cannot claim criminal activity by a person without a conviction in court. And that's why whenever there is even video evidence, we as journalists have to say allegedly. Like, it sounds crazy, but it is the fair thing to do. And Michael Larrabee was out of office. So she got an out-of-office reply, and the pitch bounced to Mark Laswell, an associate op-ed, who ironically wrote a essay collection called Fight for Liberty, Defending Democracy in the Age of Trump.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this was not only, you know, a political piece, but it's 2018, middle of the Trump administration. Betsy DeVos is in charge of education department. They're putting forward the rewriting of the Title IX, you know, rules.
Yes.
That had unfairly criminalized young men, right, without due process. And this was in the midst of the movement then that also convicted, you know, Brett Kavanaugh without a conviction, mm-hmm, right? So just to pick everyone back, like, to that fall, it was a hot, hot moment in that mantra, believe every woman, you know, without a conviction. So this is what they were pushing. And, you know, the Washington Post editorial, like, page, we know that they are in that, you know, ideology. They believe that. And then they got a green light. And I love this. I love this from Jessica White. She's literally the artist engagement person at the ACLU. Okay. So the handler for the celebrities, and she emails Amber Heard's legal team and Sean Walsh, the outside PR person for Amber Heard. And again, why is that important? Because this is a entire PR operation. And she writes, it's going to the Washington Post, 3 exclamation points, you know, success. And you know this, you know, in PR, a lot of listeners might know this, but in PR, when you pitch a story and you place it, it's called a hit. That's right. That's what they call it in the business. I hate that term, you know, like if I get a piece, quote, placed somewhere, I just say they published it. I don't say like I got a hit in the Washington Post. Well, this was not just a hit. It was a hit job, you know, and everybody knew it. And that's where, to your question, like the Post editors should have vetted this and checked to see if Amber Heard had written it. Because, you know, the places like The Hill, they literally say in their contribution guidelines, we will not take pieces ghostwritten by others. Well, mm-hmm. of course, you know, that's done all the time, but they do at least put that threshold there.
Right. Well, and yeah, it's amazing that, and you mentioned the title of that man's book, and the phrase of the mantra of the Washington Post had been changed at the time to democracy yes. dies in darkness. And as they are waxing sanctimonious about the importance of the press and Donald Trump attacking the press, this is arguably a bigger attack on the credibility of the press than a lot of, you know, the president's tweets at the time. I mean, this is like the kind of thing that really makes people question the media, and it's coming from the media.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, another real serious element for me in all of this dynamics and the duplicity and, you know, the really it's a deception that was happening in all of this is and the moment that like my just like ears perked up during the testimony that really laid this out was the testimony was by the general counsel for the ACLU and also chief operating officer. And so he said twice, his name is Terrence Dougherty, still has a job. And you just cannot, you just can't even believe that. I couldn't believe he said it. And then guess what? He said it again. He said, these are further communications among employees, staff members in the development department. So, of course, everybody should know development is code for fundraising, right? Regarding Amber's, the placement of Amber's ad. That's literally what he said in his testimony. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, not ad. Sorry. I mean, op-ed. And then, yeah. And then minutes later, because, you know, I've got the timestamp, 14 minutes, 32 seconds and 40, whatever next is the digit. He says, every step of the way, we were making these decisions with Amber's representatives involved. And sure enough, once again, he says, we were working on this ad. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't correct himself the second time.
So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can get buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that 6-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those 6-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotion-y feel either. Every set comes with 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. So you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 1-year limited warranty. Those roll and go anywhere MyPillows. You can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to take on vacation or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at mypillow.com/Federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting mypillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. mypillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. mypillow.com/Federalist. It's just a perfect Freudian slip, but it's not even a slip, nor is it particularly Freudian. He knows what he's doing, and it's sort of like increasingly in the open. And Asra, this case is just, there's so much going on with it. You know, we have the footage of the elevator camera on James Franco and Amber Heard, and it's become, I think, obviously quite a spectacle. But this op-ed is at the center of all of that because Johnny Depp is suing, and then Amber Heard is countersuing him, right?
Right. Well, I think, she's countersuing him for her supposed loss of business. But why I think this matters, and you know, I was the young woman in college who my favorite class was pop culture. Like, that's why I love what you do, Emily. You know, I think culture is such an important window into our societal dynamics, our values, you know, fairness. I mean, that's why, you know, the education issue has just taken off, right? Because it's a window into the politics of the woke, right? In our now, with some of our most vulnerable members of our community, our children. But so to me, I'm just struck by a couple really important themes in this, you know, drama. One is both Johnny Depp and Amber Heard came from very ordinary life circumstances and went to Hollywood to make it. Both of them had very troubled, traumatizing childhoods for which, like, everybody needs attention and healthy solution, right? So Johnny Depp, with his own admission, said that he self-medicated. You know, he learned to self-medicate. If people don't know it, as a boy, he experienced a lot of violence and abuse from his mom. And, you know, there's no debate about it. Like, his sister testified to it. And he is very kind and loving to his mom, even in the telling of the story, because he ultimately then, you know, as she's dying from cancer, brings her to Los Angeles and has forgiven her. And as his sister said, you know, she softened with age. But it's everybody's story, you know, it's everybody's story of overcoming adversity in their life. And of course, we wish like healthy living for everyone, but he did get into drugs and alcohol. He admits it. He kept trying to get clean. And then Amber, in her way, like, responded to her own pathology and pathos in her life with apparently just this very unstable, you know, dynamic, and especially in their relationship. So why does all this matter? To me, it matters because power and control and violence and abuse can go in many forms, you know? It can, and then we're in an age right now where the people who are adherents to critical race theory want to say that it's only whites that can oppress blacks, right? Like, there's assumptions being made in society that are actually inaccurate and dehumanizing to the experience of real people. Men, as Johnny Depp said to Amber Heard, like, and she mocked him, men can be abused also. And so this has spawned the men to movement. And I witnessed this. I was a volunteer in rape and domestic violence shelter, and I was trained. And in the training, it was so anti-men. And I found that very disheartening because I thought, first of all, it doesn't offer men opportunity for growth. It's just very condemning. And then when they might be the assailants and abusers. And then two, it doesn't offer us the opportunity to see them also as victims when they are victims. And that, so this flips the narrative on so many fronts. And that's why I, that's my story, and I'm going to stick to it on why I'm obsessed with this trial.
Well, you know, the country is obsessed with this trial. And of course, it's understandable given that Johnny Depp in particular is household name, absolute A-list of the A-list level celebrity. But it also seems like, and I read a story, I think it was in Vice, kind of lamenting the public's seeming support for Johnny Depp. It does seem as though the bulk of the interest in the case comes from people who are sympathetic to Johnny Depp's side of the story, does it not?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, after I wrote the piece for The Federalist, I like went in deep into the Johnny Depp fan culture. They were writing to me, tweeting to me. I've got a little chat now on Twitter with several of the leading folks. And they're not just fans. They're private eyes, man. Mm. They are Nancy Drews on this case, Hardy Boys, you know, to pick your metaphor. they know the facts inside out. And man, they are, taping hours long dissections of the testimony, showing contradictions. And they're doing it from a place of facts. And, you know, I think like, these are folks, if you really look at the clips over the 6 years, it is not, it is very true that Johnny Depp was thrown under the bus, you know, not only by Disney and the Hollywood studios, but by the leading celebrity journalists, you know, TMZ,
yes,
you know, all these places. And they got, like all these places, you can read it, you can see it now. Now you have the evidence in court that they were just played by PR people. Like that's the, you know, it's something that I know you know, and I definitely recommend, and your listeners are so savvy. But as a journalist, like I want to just always remind everyone, like, study the stories to see who's quoted and who's not quoted. And when it says a person close to the celebrity, who is that and who's leaking what and why, you know, just, and this is important for everything from the celebrity news to the Roe v. Wade, you know, draft opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the voices? Because after Amber Heard's op-ed ran, I went and then studied who retweeted it, you know, who was part of her now social network, because you know, Emily, just like I do, like they create campaigns then. Right. And they message, like, I know this from the PR world, like you create the draft messages that everybody writes. You do the direct, the inventory of handles to tag, you know, it's orchestrated. And I just want everybody can suspect it, but please be savvy about looking for it from all sides, you know, because everybody's got this propaganda was invented hundreds of years ago as a concept, probably like the minute they, you know, poor Eve was thrown under the bus, right? assassination on Eve. But, you know, just definitely like, that's what I did then. Like that column, just to take people behind the scenes on our work, the column ended up being about 1600 words. And that's why I love The Federalist too. Like you guys don't have like this 800 word count and then like you're out, you know, you really let the narrative reveal itself. That took me about 40 hours of work.
Right.
You know, like I want people to know, like the reported piece takes about that much time. Reading, rereading, transcripts, doing my own transcripts, making sure that the guy didn't say in when he said of, you know, you can't make any mistakes. And the big, you know, that's why it is, you know, so unethical at a minimum that the Washington Post allowed to be published, you know, an allegation as if it was fact.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me how it just kind of slipped in It's like the heat of the moment. You know, it wasn't like the headline was Johnny Depp beat me. It was just a line in the piece. And it speaks to, I think, how heated that moment was, where everybody had dropped their standards and dropped their guard. Yes. And it shows how quickly our norms can be eroded in, and especially in journalism, we've seen that, but like how the norms can just go by the wayside and crumble, you know, longstanding important standards just crumble under the heat of immense public pressure and passions. It all crumbles.
Right. But what's really important is, and I think this is what the column highlights, it's public passion. What was your other thing? You said public passion and what else?
Just the intensity of, you know, the moment. It's incredible.
Yeah. And so when do we see this replicated again later is after George Floyd's killing, right? Mm-hmm,
exactly.
And what I want to add into your analysis, which is so important and which is what the column, you know, takes you through. I wrote phases of this hit job, the phases of the operation, the special interest groups.
Everybody,
that's where we always have to follow the money, because the money takes us to the special interest groups. On this point, the passion, hashtag Believe Women, it was a construct of a PR effort by the newly founded organization called Time's Up.
Right.
That was a construct of a PR company called SKDK. Has that ever come on?
Yeah, your SKDK Knickerbocker.
Yes.
Yes.
And I want all the listeners to say, stay tuned, okay? Because we're going to have part B of this column, because I've been spending the same, like it's now into 60 hours of work dissecting the larger movement in which Amber Heard became a poster girl, because we have to understand the passion was not, just a mom somewhere, a woman somewhere angry. It was in boardrooms, you know, and Zoom calls at that time, not Zoom, you know, later. And just like the hashtag Black Lives Matter became an excuse for special interest groups that we now then was got monetized, right? With multi-million dollar corruption at Black Lives Matter global movement, nonprofit, you know, quote unquote nonprofit. And that's where like everybody is correct in being skeptical and cynical. The thing that we always have to do is like follow the facts, right? Like we have to put the ideas of what might be involved, like up on our, like, you know, whiteboard, and then publish and print and state the things that we can find facts about, right? And that's what like good reporting is about. And that's what, I'm just so happy that we had this court case. But you know, another thing, I'm so sorry, this is like so great to just dive into this. The other thing is I want everybody to know the only reason we got these emails from the ACLU is, let me tell you how hard it was for Johnny Depp to get them. He, you know, when you're in a court case, right, you're allowed to have deposition, right? First, like a testimony of people and subpoenas of folks who have relevant information. So he filed a subpoena with the ACLU, mm-hmm. and they moved to quash it, that which means deny the subpoena. And he had to go to New York State Court to sue them in New York, where the headquarters is, to obligate them to reveal these emails. They fought him tooth and nail to keep hidden the way that this op-ed got published, written, and lawyered and legaled and placed.
Which is, yeah. That's incredible to think about. Yeah. The ACLU is such a central player in all of this. The civil liberties, civil liberties.
Yeah.
How about the civil liberty not to be accused in a major media publication?
Yes.
And in the op-ed also, and you mentioned this earlier, but it actually is sort of trying to jump on this Me Too bandwagon in a very interesting way by citing that Betsy DeVos was preparing to repair the process of due process in adjudicating sexual assaults on college campuses. It says some of what she's doing is good, but some of it is bad. And it's amazing how the ACLU actually itself, first of all, allowed Amber Heard to buy a title, to buy the ambassador title by promising a donation that she did not give.
Right.
She buys this ambassador title.
Let everybody know that was the dance a couple days ago where she's Amber Heard's attorney, who is now like a rock star herself, right? Mm-hmm. I'm blanking right now. Oh my God, how could I? She's been coronated the queen. Camille Vasquez. Mm-hmm. She said to Amber Heard, "So did you give this money?" And Amber Heard has said, "I pledged it." And she's like, "Did you pay it?" "I pledged it." Pledging is paying. And so we all have to pledge our next mortgage payment, right?
Well, yeah. And so that's, again, it's amazing because she's literally with that donation buying this title of ambassador.
Yeah.
And by giving her that title, the ACLU, which is an institution in our sort of legal system, our politics and our culture, and it has been for years, is lending her undue credibility. And what's also interesting to me is that they have determined that she's telling the truth. I mean, even in the way they send the email to the Washington Post, you may recall that Amber Heard was beat up by Johnny Depp. They have decided that Johnny Depp is guilty and have bought, they've allowed their credibility basically to be bought. I found that really interesting too.
Yeah, you are so right, because everybody knows that the ACLU will never suggest that somebody is guilty of a crime without due process,
because
that's part of their fundamental mission. So, of course, you will take at face value what we are asserting, right? And then that's how they can make it normative, which is that this is literally what they're saying now, right? Kavanaugh is a rapist, right?
Right. It's a machine.
Rape is a pretty serious crime. Like, and to be a rapist is a damn serious crime, right? So for you to take an allegation and make it a fact, and then a hashtag and a sign and then a chant, is so criminal. It's so unethical. And these guys have to be held accountable. Like, it was to the point you made just a few minutes ago, is so, so important what you said, which was that this organization was built on the idea of due process, and now has become a vehicle, a political vehicle, to deny due process to boys and men in our society. And that's not just, that is completely unjust. And you know, they have to be held accountable for that. And of course, who did Amber get to pay her quote pledge? Her next boyfriend, Elon Musk.
That's right. Elon Musk comes into the picture. This trial has everything. I feel like Stefan on SNL, you know, it's just like, it has everything. It has Elon Musk, Johnny Depp. But what I love about your story is that it shows the machine and sort of pulls the curtain back on what the machine actually looks like, opens up the hood, you could say. And you see this pipeline from nonprofit to media outlet and now to court. And as it's really hard to actually know what happened in this marriage. And that's what one of the things that the ACLU jumping to Heard's side on this was weird, because even as the trial comes out, this is what I want to ask you about, Asra, is even as this is literally being litigated on national television, it's really hard to actually know what happened. And as we have gone through the evidence, what is your best sort of understanding of what likely happened between Depp and Heard?
Yeah, I'm gonna put on my psychologist hat without the PhD, which I love to do. And of course, everybody loves Johnny Depp psychologist in this too. She's become a heroine. Well, I think, like I was chronicling earlier, these were two individuals who had very traumatic and unhealthy childhoods. And and came into their relationship as broken people. And there was pathology in there. I'm not making this up, but the, you know, psychologist who interviewed Amber Heard diagnosed her with borderline personality disorder, which is a very, very serious illness that is not to be stigmatized at all, because it can be treated. And just like all illnesses, like, I'm very, very compassionate and sympathetic to brain health issues, and believe that that like all disease, we have to find treatment, right? But these were both two folks who were not treated, and they ended up, as oftentimes many of us have, in a very unhealthy relationship, triggering each other. and you know, to Amber Heard's own admission, she said that she did hit Johnny Depp. You know, in her own tape, she said, "I didn't punch you. I hit you. You know, you're just a baby, Johnny. You're just a big baby." So she taunted him. And I have not seen any evidence of Johnny Depp hitting Amber Heard. I would say that, you know, in the large definition that is abuse, that includes emotional abuse, like, you could say that some of his behavior might have been emotional abuse of her, but definitely not like what the ACLU was alleging, you know, that he beat her up, and not the allegations that she's presented of really violent. She's presented very violent allegations. So I think at the end of the day, that people have replaced believe her with hashtag believe the evidence. And, you know, Emily, and that's what, like, if I was to write the story, I would definitely not conclude that he had ever physically abused her, and would never, as an editor, have run that line that the Washington Post accepted. You know, I would have had to softened it like I was in a volatile marriage, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
You know, and it was just not criminal, you know, like, and again, like, you know, this is a issue that's emerging in public debate. Like, can you say that somebody is, that these teachers are grooming kids, right? Because grooming is actually like a editorial term that is that's not a criminal activity. But pedophilia is. So you can't say that somebody's a pedophile, but you can say, I think that they're grooming, with more latitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's still a little, you know, dodgy, but that's where these words, like they say, words matter, right? This is, again, their own language. And I do believe that Johnny Depp will actually be found. He will win. I believe he will win. And she will be found guilty of defamation.
And he's certainly winning in the court of public opinion.
Oh my gosh, he's won in the court of public opinion.
Which is very interesting, because this was kind of an untouchable thing back in the Me Too moment. But as passions have settled and some of the Me Too stories crumbled in ways that I think were actually very unhelpful for women, this
yes.
seems to be one of them playing out just a few years later. Asra, this story... really, I mean, it is so important. It shows exactly how celebrities buy credibility from the media and on issues that really change our cultural norms and our standards. So thank you so much for your reporting.
Oh my gosh, Emily, I love it. Oh, thank you so much. I feel like I'm back in pop culture 101 under that. I'm like, oh my gosh, can we, like, I literally, it's like, this is my, so I was back in undergrad in the 80s. So my pop culture, like, term paper was literally on dissecting MTV.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, wow.
And Sting's first video, like that. That's what a scholar I am. Okay. On pop culture. So
I had no idea.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You're like talking to, like, you don't know this. I know. I literally was the person who, yes, published work wife and work husband in a newspaper for the first time ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah, talking to the, yeah, thank you.
What a milestone.
I know. I know it's pretty big. I'm going to put it into my Wikipedia one day. I know. But so Emily, I love what you do and you do it so well and with such grace and intellect. So I'll come on anytime. I told you I want to write stories together with you. So all your listeners, keep following Emily. She is a bright star for us in American commentary. Okay. So support her, follow her, and share this podcast, right, Emily?
Yes, you're way too kind, Asra. Yes, and I'm so excited that you're a senior contributor for us now. First of all, selfishly, it means we can get you on the podcast more often. Yes. And we get to publish your reporting more often. And it's just, it's so good. And it's so needed. So thank you very much.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. And everyone, you can email me at asra@asranomani.com and on Twitter at asranomani. ASRANOMANI, open DMs. So send us your tips anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, make sure to do that, everyone. Yes. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist, joined today by the one and only Asra Nomani. Make sure to go give her a follow. We will be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.